Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Test Talks. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com. And this is a podcast for anyone who wants to discover how to succeed with testing and automation, as well as what works for testing any software development project. My goal is to help you succeed with test automation awesomeness. And today, it's another solo episode, and I'd like to go over what is, for some reason, my most popular blog post. The blog post name is 6 Things to Try When QTP Does Not Recognize an Object. So since the post is so popular, I thought it would make for a great podcast topic where I will expand on the 6 points, and now it's going to be 10. 10 things to try when QTP or UFT does not recognize an object. For those that don't know, QTP has been rebranded. It's no longer called Quick Test Professional. It is now always Unified Functional Testing, but the points still apply to both older versions of QTP and the newer version of Unified Functional Testing, or UFT. So some of these points are very easy. You may even go duh for some of them, but believe me, even the easy ones will trip someone up once in a while, to the more complex ones. So the first one is, which may seem obvious to some of you, is check the loaded add-ins. So basically, when you start QTP up, it prompts you for what technologies you want to use for that particular script that you're recording. So usually the defaults are .NET, ActiveX, Visual Basic, Web, WPF, Silverlight. There's other add-ins that, based on what you chose to install when you did the installation, what add-ins to install, that's what's going to appear in the add-in manager when you first start up a script. So a lot of times people will just click the default and then just start recording and then realize that for some reason their object, their application is not being really recognized by QTP, or that it just recognizes it as generic either Win objects or web objects. So if that's the case, you just always want to go back and just make sure you have selected the proper add-in. Now, this also happens. This happens occasionally on some of my VM machines. I'm not sure why. Is we'll have a script that's been running fine, and all of a sudden, it stops working. And then when you go in and try spying on objects with that machine, it no longer recognizes the objects. So with these machines, a lot of times, is when you log in, you're not prompted by the add-in manager, because there's a little checkbox that gives you an option to show on startup. And usually on our VM machines, this is deselected. So when you start it up, it automatically goes into the script and it doesn't give you an option to select the add-in. And this is normally fine, but for some reason, if you have a new user on that machine or someone's trying to debug it and it's not working for them, they'll assume that the correct add-ins are selected. So sometimes I found, and like I said, I'm not sure why this is the case, is if I re-enable that add-in, I'll notice that the required add-in is no longer selected. And for some reason, it's usually always like the ActiveX control or something. And once I re-enable that and then save the script will run fine. So this is something that may be obvious, but if you don't think about it, you could really drive yourself crazy trying a whole bunch of more complex things. I would always start with the simple and then gradually work your way to the most complex. So that's number one. Always check your add-ins. The second thing to try is research the issue. This is almost like people that don't Google things. They just will ask someone when they could simply Google it and find the answer. QTP has been around a while, and there are a bunch of different forums that help people with QTP issues that if you actually Google certain issues, you'll get a bunch of hits and links to resolve that issue. So just because you're facing an issue for the first time doesn't mean it's the first time anyone has ever seen this issue. Most likely, someone has seen this issue, and not only have they seen the issue, but they have a solution for it. So a lot of people laugh at me when I say, go to HP's knowledge base. Now, HP's knowledge base has kind of a reputation for not being that user-friendly. That being the case, they've recently upgraded their user experience for their knowledge base. So they put in some effort, they've redone it, and I think it's a little bit better, a little bit easier to use. Then when you log in now, you automatically see all the newest articles in the same view as what's available for patches, change requests, and you could do searches for a particular question that you might have, and it will show you possible matches for an answer for that question. So usually I go to HP's knowledge base and I'll do a search for it, because a lot of times people ask me the question on my blog, and all I do is go to the knowledge base and I find the answer and I answer the person. So I feel like a middleman, and I'm not sure why more people don't use HP's knowledge base. It's there, it's available, use it. It's really helpful. Also, what I found really helpful is forums. And the most useful forum I found is SQA Forums. So it's www.sqaforums.com. This forum has been around for a long time. So they have a really active user community. A lot of people ask and answer questions, and there's a lot of history there. So you can do a search, and most likely you'll find either your exact issue and a workaround, or maybe an alternative to work around your issue that may not be exactly what you're looking for, but you could probably reuse and modify to make it work for your situation. So this forum has forums pretty much every popular testing tool. So not only is QuickTest Professional there, but they also have forums for SmartBear's SOAP UI. They have LoadRunner, Quality Center, SiteScope, Visual Test, Selenium, Squish. Pretty much any automated testing tool has a forum on this site. So I really love this site. This is one of my other go-to research sites that I go to research particular issues to try to work around anything I may be encountering that for some reason I can't get over the hump. I'll go to SQA Forums and just see if anyone else has had a similar issue and see what their workaround or solution was for that. So the third thing to try is kind of similar, and that is make sure that there's not a patch that will help you. There is nothing more frustrating to try to recognize an object or work around an issue, only to find out later on that there's an exact patch for your issue. So if you go to HP's site, they show the current patches available. So say you're trying to test a newer browser and you don't have the latest patch that actually helps support that browser, that would be an issue of why you may be having recording issues against your application. Another thing is, not necessarily a patch, but it could be a hotfix. So it may not be listed on HP's site, and you may actually have to call HP support if you have a maintenance contract with them. You can call them, and a lot of times they have a known issue that's not really public knowledge yet, but they may have a workaround for you in the form of what they call a hotfix or a hot patch, and they could send that to you directly. At one time, I was able to post these on my website, but HP made me take them down. So you do need to contact them directly, because not every hotfix applies to everyone, and that's why they don't make it public knowledge. They only release it to people who are having an issue that meets the exact criteria that this particular hotfix addresses. So you definitely want to check if there's a patch or hotfix available, because it'll save you a lot of time if you just check that first. And if there is one available, it's going to save you a lot of time. So the fourth thing to try is to check your record and run settings. So in UFT or QTP, in your main menu, go to record and run settings. So I actually programmatically write my test scripts within QTP, so I usually don't have this issue. But some people who do use some recording and playback and then they modify the script heavily later may run into this issue. And that is, when you start recording, when you hit the record button, it sometimes will not recognize any objects for an application that you currently have open. And the reason for that could be, if you go to the record and run settings, and in the record and run settings dialog, you'll see a tab for web and web applications. You want to make sure that under the web tab that you have record and run test on any open browser. So if that's not selected, that could be an issue. It may not be recording because you don't have that option enabled. Or if you're testing a thick client application, the best option to have selected is record and run test on any open web-based application. If that's not selected, it sometimes has an option selected that says record and run only when the application was opened by UFT. So if you had that selected and you try to record, it's not going to recognize it because you told it to only record and run against an application that was started with UFT. And if you did not start with UFT, it would not be recognized unless you go into the Record and Run settings, go to the Windows Applications tab, and then click on the Record and Run test on any open Windows-based application. That most likely will resolve that particular issue if you're doing a record and playback and you did not go in there before you started your test to make those option selections. Number five, using a fields.object property. Now this dot object, when you're using the object spy, is available. When you click on the object spy, you'll see a view at the bottom where there's two tabs. There's a properties tab and an operations tab. Usually it shows you the properties tab and there's a native radio button selected. So it shows you all the different properties of the object that you're trying to interact with. But there's also an option for things called operations, which are kind of like methods. So the methods of an object you're spying on. So if you clicked on the operations tab, it'll show you the native objects available for that operation. And it also will show you the test objects, native methods. Also, this functionality is available too if you're programmatically creating your scripts within the UFT QTP IDE. So if you were typing browser.page.frame.winElement. You should have an option for object. Not all objects have this option, but most of them do. So say you're spying on what looks like a table within your application, but you can't find a way to get the text from what looks like a row within that grid. Using dot object, there may be lurking around underneath the layers some sort of method that has been exposed that allows you to interact with that object and get the text that may not be picked up when you do a recording or when you spy on the application directly. Now, for example, I was having a problem recognizing text on an application's custom .NET grid, but after spying on the object and trying several different methods that sounded promising, I ended up trying an odd one called getViewStyleInfo, and surprisingly, it worked. When I called this getViewStyleInfo, it returned to me pretty much everything I needed to know about that particular cell value. So it gave me the cell value, the font size, the if it was bold or italics. It gave me information about the tooltip, the vertical alignment, the read-only. Now, this I was not able to get when I was spying on it or when I was recording. But when I did the dot object and I stopped playing around with the different methods and passing in different parameters to see what was being returned to me, I stumbled upon this method and it saved the day because I was able to bake this now into my function library so that when anyone dealt with this grid, they wouldn't have to worry about object recognition. It was already within the function using this getViewStyleInfo method would return them the information needed without them having to worry about what's happening, how it's being recognized underneath the covers because you've already made a reusable function out of it so they don't have to worry about it going forward. So that's number five. I actually find that to be one of the most helpful ways or workarounds for object recognition issues that I have. I usually go to the dot object, and most of the time I do find a method that will help me recognize or be able to perform functionality against that object that normally I would not be able to know about if I just simply spied on it or did a record against it. A lot of times these methods are not really documented either, so even your developers may not know that there's already a method exposed that can give you the information that you need. So speaking about developers, that brings us to number six. Developers are your friends. Sometimes, for some reason, I think testers are afraid of developers, but you should make at least one developer on the application you're testing one of your best friends, or you should be able to bribe them, you know, with beer or pizza or something. Whatever it takes, you need to have a developer on your side. The reason being that if you can explain to a developer that, hey, I know that this object is not being recognized by my test tool. However, I can spy on this object and I'm able to see all the available methods to me. So is there a way that you can expose a method or add a property that will make my automating this application easier? So make sure you've exhausted all your available options before you go to the developer, but don't wait too long. A lot of times if a developer thinks that you haven't tried anything or really did due diligence, they may blow you off. So you just want to make sure that you actually tried all the obvious things so that you're not wasting their time. But once you get through that and you explain to them what's happening, I've had a really good track record actually getting the developer to end up exposing a method to me. For example, I work with a great bunch of developers where I work, and I was working on a legacy type application that was these older controls. And there was the guy that actually created this control maybe 30 years ago still worked there. And I just explained to him what I wanted to do. I showed him how the test tool recognized the object and how I'm able to see the methods. And he went ahead and created me a method that exposed to me the text that I needed to get in order to interact with this method. And so because I was able to explain it, and because I've already built up a relationship with my developers, I was able to get this into the code so that it made the automation more automatable or easier to automate. So this brings me off on a little rant. If you're being told by management that you need to automate as many things as possible, then that needs to be organizationally, everyone needs to be involved in that. Because if a developer is not baking in automation into the application, then by the time it gets to you, you're going to end up using all kinds of methods that aren't as reliable. So as part of the education process, you need to educate your management and tell them this is an organization-wide mind frame that when developers are developing, they need to make the application automatable, maybe creating unique automation IDs or doing things like exposing methods and properties for me when I need them in order to make the automation easier and more reliable and more repeatable. Everyone should be in on that. And I've, like I said, if you make the developers your friend, you'll have a leg up on some other testers that just hide in their cube and don't make the effort to try to get the developers to help them out. So developers are definitely your friend. So number 7, low-level recording. Now, I wouldn't recommend this all the time, but for certain instances, I found for small pieces of code that low-level recording actually helps me. For example, once again, I'm working on an older type web application, and for some reason, whenever you tab out of a field, that's when the business logic is triggered. So you actually have to click, do a type, and then you need to do a tab out of the field in order for the business logic to kick in and take you to the next screen. Now, for some reason, in our application, this is almost impossible using the standard methods within QTP. So I've tried send keys, I've tried doing a set, I tried doing a type, I tried sending the ASCII value, I've tried pretty much everything. And the only thing that ended up working is when I went to record and I changed the recording to set to low level. And basically what happens is it sets it to window-based objects. So it's more of a wind-based object. So even though it's a browser, rather than recognize it as a browser, it would recognize it as a window. And when I did this and I did a tab, it recorded as a window and a win object with a tab. And when I replayed it, it worked. So basically what I did once again is I created a function called enter. And in the enter, I would have my standard Windows set and would do the set. And then right after that, I would call this lower level method of the Windows type functions that would do the actual tab. And so when you replay it, and call that function, it uses the standard web set and would enter in the text, and then it would call the lower level functions and it would tab off, and it works beautifully. And I found this to work pretty well for certain odd behaviors that you can't seem to get around. Give it a try. Set it to low level recording. Like I said, I wouldn't use it for everything, but sometimes if you have odd behavior like a tab or some sort of maximize, minimize you need to do that's not working out of the box with the standard object that UFT is recognizing it as, sometimes changing it to a win object and using the methods on a win object sometimes help you work around it. So that's low-level recording. Number 8 is try the get visible text methods. Now, also, I would also not recommend using this all the time, but sometimes UFT QTP does not recognize text in the object using the standard get RO property text method. So as a last resort, try using the get visible text, or there's a get text location and the type method. So these methods really help me automate some old proprietary controls by using a combination of UFT's type method and the get location. I was able to create a pretty reliable rich edit box object function that could interact with this object that that basically there's no other way to interact with it other than using these older get visible text type methods that QTP UFT has. So basically this control is mimicking a green screen almost. So when you spy on it, it just sees a big edit box. It doesn't recognize anything really. But this edit box has multiple lines of text that say, you know, select batch summary option 1, 2, 3, 4. And then it prompts you with different options like select option for closing date or give me the from date. And you have to enter the text. So if you recorded this, it would never play back reliably because it just sees this as one big fat object. So basically what I did is I created a method called rich edit box, and I gave some parameters that allowed me to interact with the object. And basically in the method itself, I pass it the line text, the value to enter. What happens is it goes and it uses a get text function that gets the text that you're looking for, and then it splits it into an array to return to me the location of that text. And so based on that text, I would do a split on it. And then when I do a click on the object, I would set it. So the click method has some parameters you can pass it that aren't mandatory, that are optional. And these optional click methods allow you to pass a Y and X coordinate. So I would pass it the X and Y coordinate, and then it would place the cursor where I would need it to be. And then I would do a type method to do a mic write and then enter the text and then a mic return. And then I'm able to get the current text on the screen and then once again find out what the message is prompting me for, get the text location of that, set my cursor to that text location, get the XY coordinates, set the mouse to that, and then do a type again and then use the other method. So it sounds pretty complicated, but I actually have an example within the original post. I will include a link to this and everything else of value that we spoke about in the show notes at www.testtalks.com/26. So if you go there, I'll have a link to the original post. In that post, I actually have a screenshot of the method and the actual code that I'm talking about that I use to perform this functionality. Number 9, if you're using UFT 11.5 and above, UFT 11.5 has a new recording option called Insight, which is image-based object identification. So if you need to test an application with UFT that you were never able to recognize, or if you need to test an application that runs remotely on a non-Windows OS, in theory, using the new Insight feature in UFT, it will allow you to successfully run tests against these types of challenging situations. Basically, Insight works by UFT recognizing objects in the application based on how they look. So if you're testing an application that UFT doesn't support, it shouldn't matter that none of the objects' native properties are recognized. Basically, UFT will instead use an image to help you identify it. So you'll have something called, so basically the syntax would look like Windows Internet Explorer dot Insight object, and it'll have an image of the object that you want to interact with, followed by the method that you want to perform against that image, doing like a click or an insert. So all images are stored in the object repository, so you can go and make a change to one place. So if you had 20 scripts using the same object, you can treat it just like you would any normal object, store it in an object repository one time so all your tests are pointing to it. So you would only need to make that update once and all your tests would pick up that update. So this is a pretty cool new feature. I haven't used much of it, but I believe over time they'll be modifying it and making it better and better and better. And so I probably wouldn't recommend creating all scripts using this, but in certain situations where you have maybe just a small piece that needs to be automated that no other approach would work, I would give Insight a try and see if that works for you. And number 10, the Extensibility Accelerator. So HP Unified Functional Testing has something called an Extensibility Accelerator. There's a web add-in extensibility that enables you to develop support for testing third-party and custom web controls that are not supported out of the box by UFT or QTP's web add-in. So the Extensibility Accelerator has an IDE that helps you design and develop and deploy for these out-of-the-box non-supported controls. So basically, the IDE is powered by Microsoft Visual Studio Shell, and it has the same look and feel that you would get if you're using actual Visual Studio. So in the special IDE, you can find a new test object class and map those test object classes to the controls in your application to teach QTP or UFT how to identify the controls and then perform operations on these controls to retrieve their properties. So if you want to learn more about the Extensibility Accelerator for HP's functional testing, there is a PDF that HP has that goes over step-by-step an introduction to the accelerator, how to install it, how to support custom toolkits, and it walks you through some examples. Also, Anshun Arora and Torin Lawani have a good book called QTP Descriptive Programming Unplugged. This would also apply to UFT, but they have a pretty good example on how to use the web extensibility, and they have a whole bunch of other tips also on how to use descriptive programming to get around some issues like the ones we've talked about so far in this podcast. So I'll have a link to this book in the show notes. So those are my top 10 suggestions to try when you have QTP UFT object recognition issues. So once again, number one, check your loaded add-ins. Number two, check the HP knowledge base. Number three, make sure that there's not a patch for that. Number four, check your record and run settings. Number five, try using the .object method. Number six, developers are your friend. Number seven, low-level recording. Number eight, try get visible text. Number nine, insight recording. And number 10, extensibility. So that's it for today's episode of Test Talks. Thanks again for listening to the show. I really do appreciate you. And if this has helped you in any way, shape, or form, if so, head on over to iTunes and rate us, hopefully with a 5-star review, and subscribe to the show. Reviews and subscriptions for podcasts on iTunes are extremely helpful, and they're greatly appreciated. They do matter in the rankings of the show, and I read each and every one of them. So if you go ahead and leave, hopefully, a 5-star review, I will give you a personal shout-out in an upcoming episode of Test Talks. So please, go ahead, give me a rating, a review, subscribe to the show. I would really appreciate it.
Patch alert, listen up. Patch alert, listen up.
Before I go, I just want to let you know about two HP patches that were recently released and also a recent Selenium WebDriver version. So UFT has a new patch called Browser Certification, UFT 11.53 patch 4, that added support for some newer browsers. Also, HP's LoadRunner released a patch for a patch that allows it to integrate with their Mobile Center integration tool. And also, there's now a new version of Selenium WebDriver, version 2.440. Pretty much all the language bindings were updated up to 2.440. So I'll have a link in the show notes to some posts I made earlier this week for those patches if you want to learn more. So as always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.